Today we have three amazing panelists that are going to talk about the challenges they've had with their relationships, personal and family. First, I'd like to introduce Blake E. from Culver City.
Hi, I'm Blake, and I'm an alcoholic addict.
Hi, Blake.
All right, so I guess we'll start with the family side of things. Growing up, I had a really weird childhood. I think that by the time my mom, by the time I was growing up, my mom was kind of over it. She had three kids, and the two of them are older than me, and they were kind of out of control kids. So by the time it was my turn to be growing up and going through, you know, teenage years and whatnot, she was done. She was gone. So, there was a lot of times where I spent outside of school waiting to get picked up. Christy actually used to pick me up from school because, you know, I really didn't have anyone around that would pick me up. She was really preoccupied. My dad wasn't really around. And so at a really young age, I learned how to set boundaries with people that I loved because I was so prone to getting hurt by them. So I became total professional, very young, at how to set boundaries, because if I didn't, I would be so more broken than I already was. I know that, once I got to the age of 12, I kind of started figuring things out. I couldn't necessarily let people in that, you know, didn't deserve to be let in. I think that, especially when we're using too, we have no idea how to set boundaries. Even in sobriety, we don't know how to set boundaries. It's like a really gray area that a lot of people, they just don't know how to go about it. And that results in a lot of tumultuous relationships and a lot of relationships not working out in the best for us. I think that relationships in general obviously correlate with family relationships as well. Romantic relationships, correlate with family relationships. They kind of have very similar parallels on how to conduct, you know, them both. In my using especially, because of all the boundaries I've had to set with my family, when I was using and out there being a crazy kid, I had almost too many boundaries where I would push people away or, when things got weird or things got tough, I would run. I was known to just pack up one night and just leave, you know, boyfriends and just not say anything and never talk to them again. That was my thing. I ran because the boundaries were, you know, so highly in place. Now I'll kind of like go into how I'm having boundaries now in my sobriety because that's what this topic is on. So I've learned to have safe and healthy boundaries now. I've been in those relationships with, you know, boyfriends in the past where it's one of those, like, jumping out of the car, psycho screaming at each other, I'll jump out of the car right fucking now, you know, those relationships where you're fucking serious, too. It's, like, not a joke, you're going to jump out of the fucking car if you say one more fucking word. Like, I have been that girl. I've been that girl to be in relationships where, you know, she's cheating, so I take the credit card and go spend $30,000 on some stupid shit. Like, I have been in those relationships proudly, you know what I mean? No problem. I've had boyfriends coming to my work, my place of work, like, freaking out in front of the boss and everything. I've been fired from jobs because of those crazy relationships and not knowing how to handle them and not knowing how the fuck to get out of them. I think that some relationships, I've learned in sobriety, some relationships aren't even worth having at all. Some relationships aren't even worth working on boundaries for because they're not really worth having, and that's a lot of the times we don't see that a lot either. I think that when you get into a relationship, it's really important to set the boundaries right when you get into that relationship. Right when you're dating someone. Because those boundaries will be the defining pinnacle point as to how that relationship is going to unfold. And that's what a lot of women I know, or a lot of me, myself, have a lot of trouble doing. We all know in our hearts what's good for us, and we all know what boundaries we need to have a respectful relationship. A lot of us don't have, you know, the love for ourselves to put those down. You know, I have a lot of girlfriends and they come to me for advice. I don't know why. But, and they don't know how to have relationships. That, you know, they have, you know, sex on the first date or, you know, we all have our things and that's fine. But, there's certain things you need to, like, set down. Almost like, not rules, but just what's good for you. And that's ultra important. I think that it's really difficult to create boundaries when you're already in a relationship that is based off of no boundaries. That's really hard, and that kind of goes back into the whole point of sometimes it's really not even worth working on, I don't think. Let's see what else. You know, recently, in my own family life at least, I've had to set a lot of boundaries. You know, my mom is a total... So my mom was in the program for 14 years, 13 years, and she's no longer in the program, so she's a little, you know, she's not a crazy user anymore, but she's got her own problems. My dad is a total Al-Anon. My brother had 6 months sober. He just relapsed. My sister's a total dry drunk. She's supposedly sober, but she never goes to an AA meeting. So there's, like, a lot of things and a lot of dynamics in my family life as well that I need to set boundaries with, because if I don't, it's going to affect my own sobriety. Me not setting boundaries with my brother, who's, you know, a complete heroin addict. If I don't set boundaries with him, then it's going to affect me, and it's going to make me want to use, and it's going to make me feel like, I don't know, he's my best friend, but the thing is, it's really hard for me to kind of push him away a little bit. Because if I don't push him away a little bit, like I said, it's going to affect me, it's going to affect my whole world. My dad needs to get some fucking out on me. That's for fucking sure. My dad was like, hey, you know, I think Frank relapsed and yada yada. I think I want to get him a drug test. But, you know, those things aren't even accurate anyway, right? Like, anything he could do to not out my brother so that, you know what I mean, he didn't have to face the fact that my brother's totally shooting up again, you know? And, I kind of stay a little bit far away from my family a little bit. Not far away, but to the point where I'm not completely immersed in all of their bullshit. Because I know that I'm working on my program. I'm doing my thing. And I can't let anyone get in the middle of that. I don't know what else I have to say. How many more minutes do I have? Okay, well, that's all I really have to say about boundaries and relationships today, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, that's it. So that's how I work, and that's my shit. So.
Now I'd like to introduce Sarah G. from Northwest.
Hi, my name is Sarah G. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for asking me to share my experience with you guys. I was driving up here with my husband, and I was like, what am I going to say about this stuff, you know? And he probably started to argue with me. I'm like, dude, you really want to get into a fight before, like, we get to this thing? I'm going to, like, speak about relationships. That's what you want to do today? He just laughed and said, sure. My sobriety date is September 24th of 2006, and my home group is 390 Young People Community of Alcoholics Anonymous in Corona. It starts at 7:30. You guys want to clap for that? And my sponsor's name is Kayla, and she's an absolutely amazing woman. Yeah. I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah, I know, right? It's a total joke. So I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous with absolutely no boundaries, and I come from an extremely alcoholic home. I sat down with my family over Thanksgiving, and there was about 50 people there, and only 12 or 13 of them were not full members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was I want to say it's an amazing experience to have a family that's so enmeshed in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's kind of not sometimes, you know? the dinner conversation at our house pretty much goes like, I'll say something, my mom will say something, and it always comes back to, you know, are you a newcomer still? And then it's like, what? And so it's like a lot of AA jargon in our home. And I absolutely love it, but I know that when I was about 11 years old and my mom was walking into Alcoholics Anonymous, that it was the biggest resentment that I had, and I carried that resentment until I walked into the program. And my mom, she walked into AA and I started getting loaded. And everything changed. It became very much about, my mom tried to turn into a loving and compassionate and caring, tolerant person. And at that point, I had been raised in a violent, abusive alcoholic home. And so she comes to Alcoholics Anonymous and she wanted everything to change immediately. Newcomers want that really bad. It's going to change right now. And it didn't, not for me at least. And so my mom started saying things when she got a couple years sober, like, I love you and I'm proud of you. And I would look at her and I would say, I hate you and I don't believe you. And I know today that the relationship that I have with my mother has been absolutely worked upon in the last couple of years, and it's pretty amazing today. We can sit in a room for about an hour together without fighting. Anything more than that is too much for the both of us. And we are so much alike. We are absolutely so much alike. And it is really awesome to have my mom in Alcoholics Anonymous. I get to take my chip with her every September because her birthday is 3 days after mine. And it reminds me that both of us come from the same place. It's not about the same family. It's about we come from the disease of alcoholism. And we have that the common bond that the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about. And I think it's absolutely amazing. In being amazing, my mom is probably the one that I have the hardest time having a relationship with. And it's been a struggle for us in the last couple of years. Because I walked into the program and I wanted everything to change right away. And I became the newcomer that expected everything to be different right away. And I used to get told by my mom that it's not going to happen. My 90 days didn't compare to the however many years that I was getting loaded. So I had to continue to show her that I was serious about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, I got told things like, you don't fuck around with AA, little girl, and if you're going to do that, you can go. And it was my family members, you know, and had I listened to those family members, I probably would have left. And so for me, I know that my family, even though they were sober, they absolutely couldn't save me. And it was the women and the men in Alcoholics Anonymous that were not part of my family that saved me. And my relationship with my mom has gotten a lot better through lots of 4 steps and 5 steps and all of that. And she hasn't really changed what I have. And my perception has changed. And the actions that I take towards my mom have changed. And she's married to an absolutely amazing man. And he actually just took 11 years sober. And I tried to ruin that relationship as well. I tried to ruin all the relationships that I had in my life. But it was probably my mom, my dad, and my son that really tried to ruin. And they're the ones that I work on the most today. Everything else in my life kind of just falls into place, but those are the ones I have to put work into. And I have a 10-year-old little boy, and what I can tell you about my 10-year-old little boy is that he spent a lot of time while I was in Alcoholics Anonymous hating me. And it was really, really hard to get through. As an active alcoholic, I was very violent, and I was absolutely emotionally and physically abusive to my kids. And what I can tell you is that after 5 years of being sober, that I don't have that perfect, like, I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, like, CPS gives me my kids back and everything's all hunky-dory. I've worked my ass off on getting 2 days a week with my son. Worked my ass off. And there's sometimes he calls me, he's like, dude, I don't want to hang out with you today. And I know that today it's not about that he doesn't want to be around me. Like, he just wants to hang out with his friends. Like, he just wants to play video games or hang out with his friends. And so we have an amazing, amazing relationship today. And he knows that I love him, and that's a far cry from what it was at when I walked into the room. And let's get to the good shit, you know what I mean? Let's talk about, like, boys. Let's do that. FYI, I was talking to Blake right as we were sitting here. And I had an ex-boyfriend somewhere in here. I'm not going to look at my four siblings. I get some damage when I'm all anonymous. My experience is that when I walk into the rooms of I was so broken. I was so broken, and I didn't have this substance that I had my entire life. And alcohol, I was so in love with it, absolutely 100% in love with alcohol. And that my affair with alcohol was over once I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was like the point between falling out of love with alcohol and falling in love with Alcoholics Anonymous that I sought validation from them. And I went to this women's retreat, and I don't really do women's shit. So I went to this women's retreat a couple years ago, and I was in this room, and this woman with 40 plus years was talking about her experience in a relationship, and I'm in this retreat, and they called me to share, and I only have like a year sober, if that, and I share like my experience with all women, and I felt really comfortable talking to them about what was going on in my life. And she walked up to me after the meeting, and she was this little old lady, and she the words that came out of her mouth were not what I expected. And she told me if I wanted to be in a healthy relationship, that I better keep my fucking legs closed. I said, I can do that, I think. I'm like a free father, but I can do that. And I started not validating myself with men. I started hanging around a lot of old-timer women. And they started sharing their experience in relationships with me, women that had been married for 20, 30 years, and saying, if you want what I have, you have to do what I do. And I started doing all the stuff that they were doing. I started acting a little bit differently. My story is not that I walked into the program and I all of a sudden was surrounded by these amazing and loving women in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, I had my sponsor and I had my homeboy. That's what I had. And my experience is not that the women or the men patting on the ass and the women save it. Like, the men in Alcoholics Anonymous that I know have absolutely been stand-up men that the program talks about, and they've absolutely saved my ass with no ulterior motives. And I'm really grateful that they did, because they were the ones telling me that when you go on a date, like, you let the dude open the door. And that took probably a year for me to understand that concept. And when you go on a date, you let the dude pay for it, you know? Like, you may offer, but, like, don't force it on him. And they told me things like, don't take a man's dignity away. Don't take his manhood away. And the things that I didn't know I was even doing were being pointed out to me. And so I got into a relationship at about a year sober, and I don't even know if I want to call it a relationship. I tried to take a hostage. He had just enough time sober to be like, you're crazy, bro, I did not want to be your hostage. And that promptly ended, and I spent a lot of time being angry and resentful. A lot of time being angry and resentful, because it was like, why don't you want me, why don't you this, why don't you that, rejection, 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 insecurity, insecurity, insecurity. And I started doing a little bit more work with my sponsor about men, not just the men that I dated, but the men that were in my life, my guy friends, my dad, my brother, all the men in my life, and taking an active look at those relationships. And when I started taking an active look at those relationships, it was rough. I was really sad, and what I've been told by my sponsor is, like, it's okay to be sad in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's okay that when people walk into meetings and you're like, God, I want to hear their shit another day because I've been hearing it for the last 6 months, like, it's your responsibility to sit there and listen, because maybe nobody else is. Maybe nobody else is listening. And I did. I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous and I said, I'm sad about this today. I'm sad about it. And then I would do it again, and people would roll their eyes, and it's like, hey, look, the thing is, like, I'm still going to come here and say that I'm sad. I'm still going to come here and do it. Like, you can't take my shit away from me. You can't. And so I walked through that, and when I started to feel just a little bit better, I started feeling a little bit better. My sponsor said, why don't you try, and it was quite a couple months later, probably like 7 months later, and she said, why don't you try, you know, maybe going on a date with somebody. It's like, how do you, like, actively find some dude to date? You know what I mean? Like, what am I, I'm not putting out, like, a billboard. And so I was like, all right, well, I'm allowed to date now. So I started doing that in AA. I started going out on dates. And the really cool experience that I had was that I finally realized that I didn't have to sleep with every dude that I dated. I absolutely did not have to sleep with every dude that I dated, because I'm a pretty cool person today, you know? And I don't have to cross my own boundaries to make you like me. And so in the process of learning how to date, I went to this Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous event, and it was July of 2008, and one of my friends walked up to me, and he said, "Sarah, isn't this guy sexy?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah, that guy's sexy." And I'm going to hit it, is what I was thinking. And I've been married for 2.5 years to that man. I said, "I'm going to hit it." He was like, "I'm marrying this broad." And so we started dating, and I wish I could say that we waited a while to sleep together. That's not what happened. And I wish I could say that, like, I could get knocked up 3 months after I met the dude. But that's not what happened. I went, AA, let's do this shit, you know what I mean? Like, you're in love, I'm in love, let's go. And so, I got pregnant, and he asked me to marry him, and I don't know, at that point, it's not that I didn't believe in marriage, I just didn't believe that anybody wanted the same things that I wanted in my life. And for me, marriage is absolutely 100% forever, and I know that I can get to that forever one day at a time, you know? And so, we got married, and it was absolutely a white collar wedding. I looked up, and there was probably about 2 or 3 of my family members, and there was like 50 people from Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous. And had I not had those people there, I don't know if I would have been able to walk through that that fear of letting somebody else into my life. And so I got married to this amazing man, and we have a little girl. And my husband is the sweetest man in the world. I am an asshole. Legitimately, like, I'm kind of an asshole. And he's a very sweet man, and I take the people that I hang out with the most, and I start acting like them, you know? And so what happened is I had this amazing little girl, and it was like a spiritual awakening for me when I had my daughter. I realized I could be the best mom possible to both of my children, and that I can be vulnerable and emotional and sensitive, which I am, all of those things, all the time, every single day. I am all this mixture of, like, anger and all of these emotions, and I'm really super sensitive now. I used to not be so sensitive. I put up that wall, and all of a sudden, like, I had kids and got married, and it's like I'm crying all the time. And I did. I spent a year crying because I didn't know how to handle the emotions of loving people in my life. And so I have this absolutely amazing family today. I have this amazing family today because I put a little bit of work into Alcoholics Anonymous. And my husband and I do not have those knockout, drag-out fights. You know, we don't do that. I have this really big boundary in my life that he has only crossed one time. He has not done that since. I need a pause when agitated. I absolutely need a pause when agitated. When you are upset with me and I am upset with you, I have to take time and walk away. My husband likes to talk about things right now. And the experience I have with that is I like to hit people. And I don't want to hit him. And so what I need is a pause when agitated. And I just need anywhere from 15 minutes to an hour. Like, I need to be away. I need to call my sponsor. I need to call my friends. I need to get centered. And he knows that boundary is there, you know, absolutely 100%. Can I tell the story? we're arguing a little bit, and I walked away and was like, I'm done now. And I walked into our bedroom and he followed. It was a really bad idea for him. He walked in and he's arguing with me. What happens is I no longer see the man that I love. I no longer see somebody that I love. I see somebody that I am capable of fully engaging with. I see red, I see anger, and that's all I see. And so when that pause and agitate was taken away from me, I definitely know that sobriety has taught me how to do this. I looked and said, "Do you really want to fucking do this right now?" Because, like, if you do, that's an open door, and I am in. And he looked at me, and he's like, I'm out now. That's the worst I've ever been in my relationship. that live in them, you know? And that's pretty amazing for somebody like me. And I have a lot of amazing relationships in my life. Like, I can't count on both my hands the amazing people that I'm surrounded by today. I have the most amazing husband who I'm absolutely grateful for, and I love you so much. And I have the best alcoholic mom that I could possibly have. And an amazing relationship with my dad, and an absolutely amazing relationship with my children, and my little brother, and I've got a road dog that I run around young people and Alcoholics Anonymous with, and it's a female, surprise, surprise. And we've been running around together for almost 5 years, and she's absolutely been my rock in my sobriety, and then I have these amazing men that I'm surrounded by and absolutely protected by, and I'm so absolutely grateful for you guys. I'm so absolutely grateful that I have the relationships that I do today, and I know that for me, it's all because I set boundaries with people. I set boundaries with the men that I meet initially. I am married, and I am happily married, and I am in love with my husband, and a lot of people know that, and it's extremely important for me that, because we go to mixed meetings and all that stuff, that people know that I'm happily married. And it's extremely important for me to know, for people to know that I love my life. And Alcoholics Anonymous has absolutely given it to me. And the only thing I can say is that if you're in the middle of setting boundaries in your life, the boundaries are not necessarily for the other people. The boundaries are for you. And the hardest thing about setting a boundary is keeping it yourself. And if you're heartbroken in Alcoholics Anonymous because of a breakup, the one thing that I can tell you is to talk about it. When people are done hearing it, you keep talking about it. Because it's okay to be sad in Alcoholics Anonymous. I probably got like...
And last but not least, I'd like to introduce Jack from Huntington Beach.
Hi. Jack Grisham, I'm an alcoholic. Thanks you guys. Thank you. And thanks for having me. I wasn't going to come here because I thought it was a joke. Whatever. If you knew my relationship for the last 2 years, you would know why I'm saying that. Anyway, and I'll get into it. But I will say I'm celebrating the anniversary today, 23 years since I've been arrested today. So that's nice. And, yeah. But you do see that I didn't say 23 years since I've committed a crime, which is different. But I haven't been to jail, so that's good. And the relationship thing, it's nice. My friend came with me. She doesn't like me narking her off in meetings, so I'm not going to say who she is here. But, she's normie. And relationships, it's not just about sex. It's not just about boy-girl. It's not just about that. It's about everything. Relationships in my life all the way around. There was something that I was thinking about. I was in a meeting the other day, and I realized that one of the things that I struggled the most with when I was out there drinking and using is connection. And I was never able to speak with someone or connect with someone on any level. I got talked to a bunch. You know what I mean? Like, I got talked down to by teachers and by parents. But I never felt, when I sat next to a friend or someone close to me or whatever, I never felt that bond. You know what I mean? That closeness between people, unless I was loaded. And you throw a couple of drinks in me and a couple of Valiums and maybe a little cocaine, and I just love you and I want to give you huggies and, and let's cuddle a little bit. And I'm a cuddle afterwards guy if I'm loaded. But sober, no, man, no. And so I come into AA and I was clueless on having any relationships whatsoever. And I'm 50 years old, and I've got kids. My oldest daughter's 24 years old. So my relationships, and I'm coming up on 23 years of being sober. So this is 22 plus years of learning how to be a father, learning how to be a brother, learning how to be a son, learning how to be a friend to somebody, to even have that closeness. And I'll tell you, it wasn't until Alcoholics Anonymous that I could actually have a relationship with a friend. To really feel close, my friend that's here with me, she's a normie, and we've got a close, tight relationship. We walk every morning together. We get out and we take walks every morning. Today we crossed the 300-mile mark. We've walked 300 miles. So, yeah, great. Yeah. No, actually, read between the lines. It's called I don't have a real job. But besides that, But we're able to talk and we're able to share, and I feel close and I get stuff out of that relationship. So, you know, I think I'll save my girlfriend relationship for last, and I'll start with my mom. And that was something. I came from a family where there was a lot of physical and sexual abuse. My father died before I got sober, and I was actually blamed for his death in a court case. The longest I ever spoke to my father was when I made amends to him, and he was already dead at the time. And that was the longest I ever spoke to that man. It was probably about a half an hour, 45-minute conversation of me knelt by his graveside telling him what was going on since I'd been sober. And basically it was a one-way conversation, but it relieved a whole bunch of guilt, you know. And I'll tell you, the first time I went to his grave, I did nothing but cry. I couldn't get anything out, you know, and I just was living with that guilt of my dad. So here I am, I'm sober and I'm living at my mom's house. My mom basically handicapped me. I didn't know how to pay a bill. I didn't know how to take care of myself. I had a mom who was, you know, the Al-Anon people never got a hand on. You know what I mean? I got one of those moms. I would go to jail. When I'd get out, she'd say, "They're always picking on you, sweetheart." You know, that kind of mom. And anyway, so here I am, and I'm living with this woman, but I also hate this woman for what she did to me. Women to me were something to be abused. Something to pay back for what she had done to me. You know, my relationships with women were not. Women were liars. They were cheaters. I used to listen to my mom lie and cheat on my dad. So I'd be sneaking in listening to her phone calls with my father, and she'd be telling my dad how much she loved him. And my dad worked away from home, so I'd be hearing her on the phone call saying, "Oh, I love you, I love you." And then some other guy would call, and she'd say the same thing to him. So, as a little kid, I'm learning, hey, this is the person that you're supposed to be learning love and trust from, and they're untrustworthy. And like I said, a lot of emotional abuse, a lot of sexual abuse had also gone on in the house. However, I was incapable of leaving the house. I didn't leave. So even sober, I'm still living at the house because I can't take care of myself. I'm clueless. And I didn't like this woman. I can't say the word. I struggle with saying the word love because of my relationship with my mom for something that happened. So I drew her a picture one time. I was a little kid, maybe 6 years old, 7 years old. I drew a little picture that said love, and it had flowers on it, and I handed it to her, and she said, "What are you writing that word for? You don't know anything about that word." So even learning how to say the word love to people once I got sober was something that was really difficult for me. I lived at my mom's house, hated her, didn't talk to her other than her giving me money when I first got sober. Like I couldn't hold a job, couldn't do anything. I was an animal, really, other than what I did for a line of work, which is not much work. I play in a punk rock band. It's not like you do it. That's not a lot of work. You know what I mean? It's basically I'm an anarchist and I get paid for it. Anyway, so whatever. So here I am living with my mom, and I'll talk about her first. The first way that I started to make amends and clear the way between this woman was one of my sponsors, he had lost his mom. And so he's got kind of a mom issue, you know what I mean, because his mom's gone. So, you know, when people lose their family, they want you to be close to your family, that kind of thing. So he said to me, it was Mother's Day, and he said, "Here's what you're going to do, man." He goes, "You're going to go in there," and he goes, "and I want you," and I'm living with this woman, and he says, "You're going to walk up there, and you're going to hug her, and you're going to tell her you love her." And I said, "I don't love her, and I don't hug her. And I don't hug any, at the time, I hugged no one. You know, I'll sleep with anyone, but don't touch me, if you know what I'm talking about." Do you know what I'm saying? To have sex with someone is not intimacy. To sit there and just, you know, to have someone use your body or to use their body, I could do that easily. I gave myself up to people all the time. But to be able to sit there and to have that tenderness and to be touched and to be loved, it was hurting. It hurt. When people in AA hugged me, it burned. It, like, I could feel it when they put their arms around me, how uncomfortable it was when they touched me. And I had friends that used to try to force a hug on me. You know what I mean? They'd try to force me to hug and to hold them. And I'll tell you, one of the first commitments I even took around here was a chip commitment, because it forced me to hug people, because I knew that I had to get over it. So every time the chips came up, I raised my hand and volunteered for it so I could learn how to start hugging people. Anyway, going back to my mom, so my sponsor says, "Here's what you're going to do. You're going to do this." And I said, "No, I'm not. I'm not going to do it, dude. I ain't doing it." But the trouble is, sometimes around here, people will put suggestions in your head, and it's real hard to get them out sometimes. And I started thinking, well, maybe if I don't do it, I'm telling myself that I don't really want to be clean anymore, that I'm not willing to take that action. And Alcoholics Anonymous, as Chuck C. said, we got to be willing to take the action around here, but thank God you guys haven't asked me to go to any lengths. But I have to be willing to do it. So on Mother's Day, I walked in, and my mom was sitting there, and I put my arms out, and I walked up to her, and it was the first time I'd ever done it, and since I was a little kid, and I walked up to her, and I put my arms around her, and I said, I love you. And I didn't mean it, and it felt real uncomfortable. But I hugged her anyway, and how thankful she was that I hugged her. After that, I ended up moving out of the house, and I moved from one mom to another mom. And I'll get to that. That was my wife. I went straight from mom to wife. I got married and was still living with my mom. And then when my wife found a house, then I moved in with her. So anyway, so mom to mom. But I'm just going to stick with mom right now. So after that hug and after that initial telling her I love her, I basically have called her every day since then. I call my mom every morning and I tell her that I love her. It's been, since that hug, it's probably been, 18 years since that hug. And I do it every day. I don't miss a phone call to her. My mom has also not changed one bit. She is fucking unbelievably out of her mind, man. And I tell my friends, and they don't believe me sometimes, because I tell stories about my mom, right? And then they go, no way, that lady's nice and she's old. What are you talking about? But let me give you a story about my mother. One time at Christmas, she gave me a bunch of clothes. For Christmas, my mother buys me clothes, wherever the fuck she gets them. I have no idea. It's like, the store must be called Fucked Up Embarrass Your Kid Clothes. I don't even know what it is. It's like shit you wouldn't wear, man. So my mother gets me clothes, and I open up all these boxes, and they're all mediums. They're mediums. I'm 6'4", 280, and I'm lying about the 280. You know what I'm saying? So she gets me all these mediums, and I call her on the phone. I go, oh, mom, I go, that's nice. I go, that's so nice. I go, thanks for all those clothes. Thanks a lot. And I go, but they're all mediums. And she goes, I know. She goes, that's the size you should be wearing, fat son. So she has not changed. Anyway, but I don't care that she hasn't changed. And I stay out of it. My boundary with my mother is stay out of it. None of my business. My sister still lives there with her. She's handicapping my sister. She's, and these are grown people living in the house, right? It's crazy. And my mother built a squirrel cage on the front of the house. They had a possum for a pet. This is real. It was frightening. And I just stay out of it. It's none of my business. My business is call her every day, tell her I love her. And I'll tell you the reason why, one of the big reasons why I do that with my mom is because I made amends. Like I had said earlier, sometimes I would do stuff around here to get you guys to approve of me. I'm going to do something to make you approve of me. But so the first time I made amends to my mom, it was basically, hey, I'm sorry for what I did, blah, 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 all that bullshit, right? And when I went back and really made amends to my mom was when my older daughter started doing drugs. And when my daughter started disappearing, and when I started beating up boyfriends, and when I started having run-ins with the police because of my kid, then I went back to my mom and said, I'm really sorry now. Now I'm really sorry for what I did to you. And I asked my mom, I said, how did you deal with me when I was getting loaded? And she said, sweetheart, I would lay in my bed at night, and I would pray that you wouldn't die. So my amends to her is that hug, that kiss when I see her. My amends is that phone call every day. I try to make that phone call every day, no matter where I am in the world, to call my mom and say, hey, I love you. I love you. And to love her exactly as the way she is. I went from that mom to another mom. I have had continuing relationships, overlapping relationships, since I am in third grade. I was one of those guys that could not stand being alone. The door was shutting on one while the other one was coming through the window, man. And I will tell you, to be quite honest with you, I think sleeping with a bunch of women saved my ass around here. Because the first year when I got sober, if I was completely awake and had no comfort and nowhere to turn to, I think I probably would have ended up killing myself, man. No drugs, no alcohol, and the shit that I ended up having to deal with. Some of these girls that 13 stamped me. And if you don't think the girls are as bad as the guys, you're nuts, man. Hang around. Hang around. You know what I'm saying? It's not. I love that. I love seeing these women that are like, oh, these men 13 stamped. Yeah, easy, lady. I heard you talk. So anyway. but it went both ways, man. It was like, hey, love me, love me, love me, touch me, love me, stop. I don't want to feel this. I don't want to feel it, And I did that. So like I said, overlapping girlfriends for a long time. And then I met this woman that I married. And I moved right in with her, and she basically took care of me like my mother took care of me. It was the same thing. I was like the big book says, you know, when they talk about how the husband goes to such a point that the woman in the family starts wearing the pants, and he's treated like a child, basically, by her. And that's exactly what it was. She just got a new son, is what happened to her. And I ended up marrying her to about 18 years, for about 18 years before we ended up getting a divorce. And so I want to step to my kids. My daughter's mother, I got a girl pregnant when I was drinking, and I just said, move into my mom's house with me. You know, let's go, let's have a baby. I was 26 years old, mental capabilities of a 12-year-old. I was clueless. And I moved her into my mom's house, and I had a baby, and it was terrible what I did to this woman. We would be getting in fist fights when she was 8 and 9 months pregnant. I would be coming home drunk, crawling in bed with her, smelling of somebody else's perfume. It was just, it's foul. And when my daughter was born, I'd love to say that I was down at the hospital to be such a great dad, and that was not the case. Some guys were trying to kill me, and I went to the hospital to hide out. And while I was there, my kid was born. The minute my daughter was born, it was instant guilt. Instant guilt. Because I tell you, I'd look at that little girl, and she knew everything that I had ever done. I saw it written in her face, all the burglaries, all the crap, all the shit. You know, I'd look at that little girl and I'd see that purity in her, and all I saw, that what was echoed out of her, was straight evil out of me. I let her go because I didn't want to be a dad. I didn't want to be her dad. I didn't want to be connected to somebody. I didn't want to be close to somebody. Connection hurts. I didn't want it. So basically, I let them go. But after I got sober, little by little, I wanted to see my kid. You know, I wanted to see my daughter. So I made amends to her mom, and the first amends was greeted with, fuck you. Fuck you. You know, it's like, yeah, you got 90 days sober, so what? You've been an asshole for 26 years. Fuck you. The second amends was greeted with, fuck you, thanks for paying your child support. And I'll tell you how that happened. Like I said, when I came in here, my relationships with women were terrible. We're awful, you know. Women were victims to me, basically. That's how it was. And not even so much victims, just the fact that I just didn't care. I just didn't care. And I had no connection with a woman, no connection other than a physical, sexual connection. But I come in here and I start sitting in AA meetings with you guys, and then I start hearing the women talk. And women talking from the heart, not selling nothing. They're not selling nothing. They're saying, hey, here's what's going on. Here's what's happening. Hey, I don't know if we have a place to stay tonight because my ex isn't paying child support and we have nowhere to live. Hey, I'm out of money. I'm out of food. I don't know what I'm going to do. I started falling in love platonically with the women in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started hearing them, and I'd hear their stories, and then all of a sudden I realized, you know what? I'm not paying my child support. And there's a woman somewhere sitting there saying, you know what? My ex is screwing us. We have nowhere to live. And I realized by listening to these women's stories what I was doing to that girl. And that's why I started paying my child support. Also, the women on the program taught me how to be a man. You know, I laugh at these guys that just go to men's meetings. You cannot learn how to be a man by just going to men's meetings. I'm sorry, you can't. Women have a completely different idea of what a man is than what a man is thinks. You know what I'm saying? Ask your men friends what they think a man is, and then go ask the girls what they think one is. It's completely different, man. I would have my daughter on the weekend, right, you know, and I'd call my buddies up, and I'd go, what's going on? They go, we're going to the track. I go, ah, fuck, I got my kid. They go, bring her. Actually, at the Los Alamitos racetrack, I got an argument with a 5-year-old over a bet I was trying to place. Anyway, so the ladies on the program said, no, Jack, no, we don't do that. You stay home tonight. You stay home, you know, and that's what I did. I learned how to stay home. I learned how to take care of my daughter. I learned how to be a dad. Like I said, the first amends to that lady was greeted with FU. The second was FU, thanks for paying your child support. Then it was FU, you can see your daughter for an hour. Then you can see your daughter for a couple hours, then a weekend. She let me have my kid for the whole weekend, man, and I didn't know what to do. It was hard. It was stressful, man. You know, she'd start screaming. I wouldn't know what to do. You know, hey, do you want some Skittles? What do you want? It's like, clueless, you know. But because of being around here and practicing that love, I kept doing it. And when my daughter was, she was 10 and I was 9. She used to have a year more than me. She does not anymore. I guarantee you we could conference call her right now and she's loaded. Anyway, but happily loaded. So what happened was my daughter was going to have to switch to two different schools. And I went to her mom and I said, could Anna please come and live with me so she doesn't have to switch schools? And her mom said, yeah, I trust you. You can have your daughter. So basically, after, you know, 9 years of working the program, showing up, keeping my mouth shut, doing what I'm supposed to be doing, she let me have my kid. When they talk about the word principles before personalities in Alcoholics Anonymous, basically what they're saying is, can you hold a course true regardless of what happens around you? Can you act like a sober member of the program? Can you practice these principles and do these steps even if everyone else in the room is loaded? Everyone in the room, everyone in AA is loaded, do you still stay sober? Do you still act sober? Do you still make amends even when it's not accepted? Do you still hold true? And basically that's what I did to her mom, and she gave me my daughter. My relationship with my daughter has been unbelievable. She's 24 years old. She's like a best friend to me. You know, we toured Europe together. I brought her. We took separate flights. We met in Germany. And the first time I see her in Germany. I go, what's up? She goes, British Airways gives out free booze. And she was hammered. She goes, Dad, I had a glass of wine in L.A. and I woke up in London. Yeah, great, sweetheart. Anyway, you know, and we just hang and we're good friends, you know, and we're close, and I've been honest, and I've treated her like one of you, you know, loving that little girl and not leaving and loving her. And it's been hard, man. I'll tell you, one of the worst things that happened, and watch me on time because I'll just yap. One of the worst things that happened, being sober, I didn't have anything. I didn't have any money. I basically was living at my mom's, had nothing. I was driving a shit car, just trying to scrooge by. It's just awful, man. And I took my daughter home one day, and I'm driving this fucking car that, no lie, had a rope holding the passenger door on it, right? And I look, you know, I got blue hair, and I'm not looking like that good. And I'm with my kid, and we go to pull up to our apartment complex. She goes, park here, park here. I'm like, oh, wait a minute, you're on the other side. She goes, I know, I can walk. I'm like, you're six, and I'm walking, what are you doing? She goes, just park here. I go, ah, it's the car. I go, all right, I'll park. So I parked it, right, and I get out, and she goes, I can make it on my own. I go, no, I'm with you, right? So I'm walking, and this other little girl comes up, and she goes, is that your dad? And my daughter goes, yeah, it's funny, and it wasn't that day. Anyway, it basically broke my heart, man, because I realized she was embarrassed of me. And, embarrassed for what I was doing. And later on, you know, I started just, you know, like I said, working on that relationship, showing up at school, volunteering at school. There's actually a movie out right now. It's called The Other F Word, whatever. I can make a plug for this because it's not mine. But it's about fucked up dads. And my kid's in it telling stories about me. Anyway, but basically working on that relationship, and I'll tell you how that relationship is today. One of the key things that shows you how it changed is my daughter came to me with a problem one time, and it was a physical problem. It was a woman physical problem that she wanted to talk to me about. And so I talked to her about it, and it was a medical issue, and we were talking, and then I called her mom to talk to her about it. And her mom didn't know anything about it. And my daughter called me up, and she goes, what are you doing calling my mom? And I said, well, you know, I was worried, I was concerned. And she goes, Dad, I don't have that kind of relationship with her. She goes, I came to you because I trust you. You know, and basically, you know, I owed her a real big apology, but it was also shows the relationship between me and my daughter around here, that she can come to me and talk to me, you know. And I got two little girls, and I treat them the same. So I talked about mom, talked about daughters, and now I'll finish with this. I've had quite a few relationships in Alcoholics Anonymous, and the last one is why I thought this was a joke that they asked me here. I fell in love with a girl who was, we started to be friends, and she was sober and not sober and sober and not sober, and she basically relapsed. She had relapsed, and she was out drinking, and she goes, oh, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. I go, yeah, whatever, you know, it's not my business what you're doing, you know. And so we're kind of hanging out, and this was a couple of years ago, So I said, look, why don't you come down and have dinner with me? You know, get away from L.A., come have dinner with me, let's hang out. And so basically she came down and had dinner with me, and first date. Anyway, I don't follow that rule, thank God. And whatever happened on the first date, but now we're seeing each other. So we started seeing each other, and I said, look, I'm not going to have it around me. I go, whatever you're doing, you know what I mean, but I just don't want it around me. You know, and she goes, okay, great. That was on October 4th of 2009. A couple days later, she called me up, and she goes, I still haven't had a drink. I go, oh, well, good for you. She goes, and I started going back to meetings. I go, what? She goes, yeah, and I got a sponsor. What? So now I'm dating a newcomer. Anyway, so 3 days before, I'm just dating a fucking drunk. Now I'm dating a newcomer. So, and it's so funny. It's like, you can come in here and say, yeah, I'm dating a drunk. And I'm like, oh, wow, how's that going to work out? Come and say you're dating a newcomer. That's crazy. And and like I said, I'm 22 years sober, man. You know, and how do you think that looks in the room? You know, I went from going to be poster boy of AA to scumbag in a minute. You know, walking in a room, preying on the newcomer. You know, it's like, and I will tell you something. Let me tell you something. There's a big difference between preying on a newcomer and falling in love with one, because that's basically what I did. And if you want precedence in the big book, God, as you understand it, Jim Burwell fell in love with his wife on a 12-step call and married her. So anyway, all right, but a little AA history there for you, too. So anyway, so now I'm dating a newcomer. And I will tell you, if men and women are preying on new people, you will get loaded. Guaranteed you will get loaded. And I'll tell you why you get loaded. Because if you still have the ability to prey on someone, then you have had no spiritual awakening and no psychic change. If you're using people sexually just to get off, you will get loaded, guaranteed. Unless you're a complete sociopath. And I know we talk about that, you know, not dating newcomers to protect the newcomer. And I hate saying this, but let me tell you something. Most of it is to protect people with time. Because I'll tell you, when you date someone new, they're used to craziness. They're used to insanity, they're used to lying, they're used to cheating, they're used to going to jail, they're used to doing this. I was 20 years sober and I was not used to it. And I didn't know what was going on. And I'll tell you, I am easily lied to these days because I just don't think people are lying anymore. You know, when you're out there lying and stealing, everybody's lying and stealing. You know what I mean? I actually leave shit out unattended now because I think, well, who steals anymore? You know, it's like, fucking everybody dies. Anyway, so basically, this girl's sobriety date is our anniversary date. And we're still seeing each other after 2 years, and it has been unbelievable. It has been unbelievably out of control, is what it's been, unbelievable. Because being brand new, and I knew right away at the start, and I told her, I said, sweetheart, look, I know what's going to happen. And I'll tell you, this is what was rough. I was told by one of my sponsors that I need to break up with her. And this is when we first started seeing each other. And so I was going to do it. And we actually sat at a restaurant. And I said, hey, you know what? I can't see you anymore. And she started crying. She goes, I get sober and you're going to dump me? You know? And I said, fuck, no. No. No, all right, I'll keep seeing you and I'll fire the sponsor. Anyway, so... but basically what's been going on is dealing with eating disorders. Dealing with physical disorders, dealing with someone that doesn't know how to be intimate with someone, dealing with someone who's finding out that not all guys are trying to just rape and use her. You know what I mean? Someone to deal with that stuff, and I'm also dealing with someone that had a hard time being hugged and touched, just like I had a hard time being hugged and touched. And to go through that, man, and it's been really hard. And I'll tell you, on some of this stuff, like when it was really getting crazy and my friends are going, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? There was a part of me that thought, God damn it, man, how many people put up with my shit? You know, how many people listened to me lie and took me back time after time again? And then there was another part of me that said, you deserve this. You deserve it for what you've done. Now you're getting a taste of your own medicine. So it's been a very interesting 2 years, and I'm going to end with this. A lot of people sell fear in Alcoholics Anonymous. You will hear a lot of fear sold around here. You'll hear people say, don't think around here, let me think for you, your thinking's going to get you drunk, that's bullshit. If you have a psychic change and a spiritual awakening, your thinking will not get you drunk. You will make mistakes, I guarantee you're going to make mistakes. The big book says you're going to make mistakes, but it doesn't mean you're going to get drunk. Bad relationships do not mean you're going to get drunk. Bad decisions do not mean you're going to get drunk. People make bad decisions all the time in AA. All the time. It doesn't mean you're going to get drunk. It means it's going to hurt, and it means it's going to hurt a lot worse than it ever hurt when you were getting loaded before because you've got nothing to stick up in you now. But it doesn't mean you have to turn back to alcohol. So anyway, I just want to thank you guys for having me. And thank you.
Let's thank our panelists one more time for coming out. So we have time right now. If anyone would like to share or has a question. Yeah.
Did you share at Iggy Pop?
Yeah. San Francisco? Yeah.
Okay, awesome. I like the mall.
Yeah. Yeah, come stay with us. We'd love to have you.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to say you guys did a phenomenal job. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
So what do you recommend, like, sponsors mind people about, like, dating newcomers, how to deal with all that? Because what's the general guidelines you suggest to people that are, when they're new and, you know, all that, you know what I mean, with dating, that shit? In the program.
You guys should get it? I mean, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is very clear on how we deal with each other's sex lives. We stay the hell out of it. It's none of our business. Also, it also says, and it's very clear on this, it says when a man or a woman is going to get back together, it says the two of you will know when it's right. Not the three or four of you. Not you, him, his sponsor, her sponsor, in a co-party getting back together. No, the man and woman know what's right. Now, if you can stay out of a relationship, I would recommend doing that. You know what I'm saying? If you can, but if you can't, it doesn't mean you're going to get loaded. It doesn't mean you're going to get loaded. And we don't, I mean, the one thing about the Big Book, it was written back in the 30s. So they're talking about man, wife, couple of kids, wife doesn't work, husband works, white, middle class, family. That's what they're talking about. They're not talking about boy-boy relationships. They're not talking about girl-girl relationships. They're not talking about dating. None of that's in there, you know. They're talking to us like we're married couples in here, and that's not the case. So I stay out of people's business is what I stay out of. And I also, I'm a big believer in alcohol. I believe that if you drink it enough and you're an alcoholic, you will get your ass kicked enough to stop doing it. And I'm also a real big believer in God. It's God's business. And that's what the book says. We let God judge this deal. It's not up to me to judge. I don't have all the information. And that's why they say that. I mean, we think we got all the information around here, and we just don't. We don't know enough. I don't know who's going to see who, and all of a sudden it's going to click. Or who's going to see who, and they're going to get a divorce. There's people around here that have been sober years, and they get together, they're divorced. They don't stay married, you know. And I'll shut up with my daughter, when she was coming into the program, I wish she found a guy that was sober. I wanted her to come in here and hook up with some dude that was working the program. Because if you fall in love with somebody who's working the program, and you're not, either the relationship's going to end, or the other person is actually going to start busting their ass and working steps because they realize it's going to fail. And the other person sets an attraction, not a promotion. And that's what happened with me and my girlfriend. She got a sponsor. She started working steps. You know, going to therapy. She started trying because she realized, you know what, this guy's going to leave me. You know, so that can actually add good too. And like I said earlier, just because you get in a bad relationship, stop blaming your drunkenness on bad relationships. I got loaded because my boyfriend's an asshole. Yeah, great reason. You know what I mean? It's like, you got loaded because you're an alcoholic and you've never worked a first step. That's why you got loaded.
I'm a drug and alcohol counselor at a facility in Lake Arrowhead, and I got about 35 clients in this room right now. What do you recommend as far as early treatment?
Yeah.
Romances go.
First of all, I mean, who really wants to have that story? Like, yeah, you know, me and my girl, we met. That's never a good beginning of any story. Let's be honest. And second of all, I think treatment is, you know, treatment is completely different ballgame. Treatment is where, you know, there's a lot of people that are, you know, in a place of trying to get their life structured and trying to get their head straight because they're detoxing off drugs or, you know, trying to get what this program is all about. So for people to conduct that in a treatment facility is like completely different from what he's talking about. So, I mean, I wouldn't be a firm.
What do you recommend
for
my 35 clients?
You know, keep the dick in the pants for now. You know, 60 or 90 day program to get through, and then have at it.
second recommendation. I say you have Wednesday night disco date night, man. But there is also, there's another thing in the book also, because of course being in a treatment center is different than being on the AA campus, boy loves girl, that's bullshit, whatever, you know. But there is something else. In the chapter to the wives, there's a great paragraph, one of my favorite paragraphs in the book, and they're basically talking to somebody who's new. We're talking to the wife of a new man,
right.
And what it says in that paragraph, it says, we do not try to shield a man or guide his affairs in any way. We let him come and go as he pleases, because God has either removed his liquor problem or God has not. And I'm a big fan of that. Letting people come and go as they please, and they're either going to get loaded or they're not going to get loaded.
I think in regards to relationships, what my sponsors reminded me of is creating a red flag list in regards to relationships and stuff like that. She's encouraged me to get to my steps first before I engage in a relationship.
Let me kind of ask a question.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm not the devil here speaking on that other side. But what does that look like when you finish a step? When is that? Do you see what I'm saying? I mean, how long do these amends go? I'm almost 23 years sober and I'm still making amends. And if we're looking at the 11th step, I'm seeking through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God. Improve means it's never finished. It means every day I'm constantly working to striving to do it. So basically, I'm still working at 11th, and it will never be completed until hopefully the day I die. And the same thing with the 12th step. So here, on these rules, I have found that it's never for anybody. So how much of a 4-step do we look at? Because my 4-step at 1 year sober versus my 4-step at 5 years sober, 10 years sober, 15 years sober, 20 years sober is a completely different 4-step. So I think this is one of the reasons why, and I'm not saying that. I have a sponsor who tell me, Jack, if there's a red flag, you're painting it green. So anyway, but I think that a lot of this is because it's so different in every case, and we learn from people. Some people learn from sponsors that are real rigid, and that's what they need, and they follow that. Some people learn from sponsors that are loose, they follow that. But there's no real set rule. I've seen guys date people on day one, and the happiest couple I know, Mac and Michelle, she had 5 years, she had 4 days. Now they got 5 kids, and they're still married, and they're like a poster couple. It's unbelievable, man. The love and the kindness and the meetings at their home and all that. And then you see the opposite. You see new guys meet each other, one to kill each other, one gets loaded, one shoots himself. So I don't think there's any straight and fast law that we can lay down for people.
And you're absolutely right. And I get all the individual sort of things because of what I went through in a 13-year relationship in my past. That's why you've given me a red flag to follow through with. You know, the rape and all that stuff that I went through before. So therefore, and the steps go on for our whole entire life, right?
Right. Hell, as far as I know, I don't know anybody who's ever finished them that's still alive.
I know for me, what happened to me is, you know, I do what I do for a living today, but like when I was 65, 7 days clean, I got with a lady that had 9 years in NA. And that was, you know, that was a no-no and blah, blah, blah. But I'll tell you what, I look back on that experience now, that's the best experience of my life. She taught me how to have a relationship clean and sober. She taught me how to go to meetings, took me to conventions, pick up my pieces when they were down. You know, gave me programs that I didn't have. I didn't have any idea how to stay clean and sober. This woman helped me got me to my first year, broke up with me, and then we went our separate ways. But I'll tell you what, I owe a lot to this thing for my recovery. I'll never forget what she did for me. So.
And then does anybody have a big book in here? God forbid somebody have a big book in here. Something else that's kind of like important with this deal is, yeah, we may burn out on drugs and alcohol, but then burning out on everything else. Because it's really about, thank you, it's really about searching that connection with the Spirit or with God. So we come in here and all of a sudden we're sober and we think, oh, the drugs and alcohol is going to do it. But no, now it's gambling. Now it's food. Now it's sex. Now it's relationships. And little by little, all of a sudden, we realize, well, the gambling ain't solving it, and the food ain't solving it, and all these shitty relationships aren't solving it. So finally, we get to the point where we realize that the only person that can solve it is a relationship with a higher power. And on page 52, this is one of the most, to me, it's one of the most important things. I don't know why AA never made a pamphlet about this. But it's one thing to be fucked up drinking and using. It's another thing to be fucked up sober. And this is what they're talking about, of being sucked up sober. It says, we were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. And basically, to burn out sober, and maybe realizing, hey, all these girls I'm running to isn't helping. All these guys I'm running to isn't helping. There's one that can help. That's God. And now I'm going to start going this way.
Any other questions or comments? I've asked Paul to read a vision for you and then lead us out in a serenity prayer.
Paul, an alcoholic.
Hey, Paul!
Oh! Vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day with a man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great new events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Give yourself fault to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you very much.